Hello, dear listener. It's Jazza here. Just quickly jumping on to let you know and give you a heads up because we finished recording this podcast where we talked about North Korea, Nazi dogs, and big balls of fat clogging up Britain's sewers, stimulating content. And then some actual news dropped with Amber Rudd resigning as Home Secretary. So we are gonna like add that onto the very end of the podcast because we literally came off air, the news notifications went out, and then we were like, well, let's just record again. So nothing's gonna be mentioned in the intro about Amber Rudd, but it is gonna come at the end of the podcast. And the first thing that you're gonna hear now is Jimmy saying hello.
Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, screaming into your internet echo chamber one painful episode at a time. My name's Jimmy and I voted to leave the EU in 2016.
And I'm Jazza and have been dealing with the crippling guilt of being white, cis, male and privately educated since 1989. And just by hearing that I use the word cis to describe myself, you can probably guess how I voted in that same referendum.
Very clever.
I try. It's because of all that private education.
Do you think 100% of people who would describe themselves as cisgendered voted to remain?
No, because you're also going to have the Lexiters, aren't you?
Mm,
the left-wing Exeters.
Left-wing Exeters.
That's a terrible portmanteau, isn't it? Let's be fair.
I think the amount of people that actually describe themselves as cisgendered is probably pretty low on the whole.
Negligibly so. It's just what you are. Jimmy, I think you just need to get used to it.
Yeah, but because it's the default, I think most people probably don't ever consciously describe themselves as that, if you see what I mean.
Do you think that women shouldn't have to describe themselves as women then, because they're the default?
For the male-women thing, it's more of a 50-50 type distinction.
Okay,
you do take your point that it's 51-49,
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
Aren't I clever?
It would be like pointing out that I have four limbs, which isn't true of everyone, but you know, is true of most people, 99% of people. So, do you see what I mean?
It's, I don't know. I think there's something to say that you're an able-bodied person.
Yeah, but like, it is true, but usually it's not something that you say actively, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, but maybe. I'm just trying to plant the seed, Jimmy, that maybe it is something that we should acknowledge, you know, because then you can think about yourself as someone who is able to move around in the world in the way that maybe somebody who isn't able-bodied or isn't cisgender can move around. Anyway, hello, welcome to the podcast. We meet sometimes to talk about politics, current events and social issues.
We don't usually meet these days, we do it over Skype because we're modern people.
Stop ruining the fantasy and the illusion like you always do.
Sorry, that's what I'm here to do, just to prick your bubble and explode your dreams.
Yeah, I would never be able to make videos with you. I'm like 100% controlling the image that gets put out, and then I'm here with you on a podcast and you're destroying the illusions I want to create for our dear audience.
I mean, the last time you did make a video with me, I was abused by angry trans people. So we probably shouldn't repeat that exercise, I don't think.
No, you weren't.
Yeah, I was, RuPaul.
Yeah, that's... Drag queens aren't trans.
Oh, well, you know, there were.
Some of them are trans. No, that was angry Drag Race fans, and they are very different.
Some of whom were trans people.
Okay, sure. We'll go back. I'm sure. Maybe we can do a Jimmy reads and gets butthurt about about RuPaul's Drag Race fans dragging.
I wasn't butthurt, but they were very angry. They were very, very irritated.
Poor baby. Jimmy, what are we... Let's stop getting sidetracked. All the bloody time. What are we going to talk about this week?
We are going to start with the Count Dankula court case. If you haven't been keeping up with this, yeah, this is real news that has been printed in newspapers.
Just you wait until our final topic.
Count Dankula is a YouTuber who infamously taught his girlfriend's pug dog to actually raise its paw in a sort of pseudo-Nazi salute when he said the phrase "gas the Jews," and he uploaded a video of this to YouTube and was convicted of grossly offensive communications in Scotland. And we did originally record something on this, but it never got released. because there were technical issues. But he recorded it when he was convicted. He's now been sentenced, and he's going to be fined £800 over the incident. So he's not going to jail. So he's got off in that respect. But he has been fined, and there's been a lot of talk about how offensive communication laws are being put into practice in the age of the internet, and whether they should be updated. I mean, on a more fundamental level, whether we should have laws that make it illegal to submit grossly offensive communications. But Jazza, what do you think about all of this? Because I think you usually take a slightly different position to me on these kind of issues.
Oh, he sounds like a fucking idiot, doesn't he? I just wish that we were able to have conversations around freedom of speech when it doesn't involve some twat on YouTube teaching his dog how to do a Nazi salute.
It's been like quite a good year for twats on YouTube doing silly things, hasn't
it? Yeah, no, it really has been. But I feel, yeah, we'll get into this later. But I think that the right to do stupid things on the internet should probably be protected.
You probably would say that as a YouTuber, though.
As somebody who professionally does stupid things on the internet, yeah, I probably would. Yeah, we'll get into it later, Jimmy.
Cool, cool. As our Asian expert, you should probably introduce the next topic.
Oh, it's just the most populous continent, and I'm the expert, am I?
Cool. You're the expert of all of Asia.
All of it.
All 4 billion people, however many people live there.
Inevitably, I feel like I am going to have to go through the history of Korea at some point in this episode as well. Basically, in the last week or so, my world, when it comes to understanding Korea, has kind of been flipped upside down, and I don't really know how to feel about it. So Kim Jong-un, who is, to give him his official title, the supreme leader of North Korea, he has completely changed his tune. You'll probably remember him from, you know,
from such hits as
I'm going to sink a load of South Korean ships, I'm going to have a war with Trump over on Twitter, all of that kind of stuff. He also has a nuclear program that nobody really wants him to have, because he's
a lunatic.
A lunatic in charge of a country. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Imagine if there was anybody else in the world who were a lunatic and in charge of a massive nuclear arsenal. Mm. But he is now meeting with South Korea, and with the president of South Korea, who's called President Moon. And this is just a little bit crazy, because they hate each other, and it's all kind of done a 180 in the past month or so. And I don't know how to feel about it or why it's really happened. And I'm kind of annoyed that a load of people, I tweeted about this and was kind of, I was rightly criticized by a lot of people. I was really annoyed because I saw a few conservative commentators suggesting that Donald Trump should get the Nobel Peace Prize. And I was like, maybe we should give the Nobel Peace Prize to the South Korean president, seeing as it's primarily their policies. But actually,
well, to be fair, we only usually give Nobel Peace Prizes to people who go on to commit awful atrocities, so Trump seems a more likely candidate in that respect,
or people who have yet to do anything, like Obama in like 2008. Indeed, who got a Peace Prize for just not being George Bush. That was one of my favorites. But I was all ready to criticize this whole kind of American-centric view of Trump has saved Korea. And then people quite rightly on Twitter showed me a video, an interview that the foreign minister of South Korea, Kang Kyung-hwa, did with CNN, where she said that a lot of this was actually because of Trump and Trump policies. And he's the man who said that he'd bring fire and fury. And I'm still kind of very skeptical as to how much the Trump administration has been able to kind of facilitate this. But this is like this is a really big deal when it comes to peace in East Asia, because North Korea have been really crazy. And now they're talking about them being the same nation, and they're talking about them coming together and getting rid of all of their nuclear testing facilities. It's mad. It's mad. Mm.
So for our third topic, we are going to go from one massive pile of lard to another massive pile of lard. Jazza, what's this third topic that you've put before us?
You know what, Jimmy? That's actually, that was a great segue, and I think you deserve to be commended for that. So there was a TV program on Channel 4 this week about a fatberg. Yes, you heard that right. A fatberg, as in an iceberg, but made of fat. So the UK is currently having a little bit of problems with a load of with outdated infrastructure in the form of sewers being clogged up by a lot of fat, poo, wet wipes, apparently.
Drugs, a lot of drugs.
Loads of drugs.
A lot of undigested protein shake material.
Yeah, well,
that sounds of it.
This is one of the problems, is that people take these protein supplements, but your body can only absorb a certain amount of protein a day. So they literally just piss it all out.
Mm. And I mean, also, if you're at the gym, you will see people just like washing out protein shakes straight down the sink, which I'm guessing isn't entirely good for clogging things.
Bloody idiots. But they've recently done like an autopsy of one of these fatbergs that they found in the sewers in London, and we're going to talk about what was found in this big 250 meter apparently like long thing of fat and poo. Yum yum.
Excellent. Should we play some music and beg people for money, and then we can talk about the poo at some point?
Oh, yes, I can't wait. Mm. Yes, yes, yes. You're sick of hearing my voice on the podcast all on my own without Jimmy already. I know that he's your favourite, but I just wanted to remind you guys that we are a listener-supported podcast. It's you lot who help us to be able to pay for hosting fees and for equipment, which does rack up. Thank you so much to everybody who is already a patron of ours. Patreon is a subscription service that allows you to give us just a little bit of cash every episode that goes out. Thank you so much. If you like this podcast and you think you'd like to give us that kind of a tip, then please do check it out at Right Dishonourable on Patreon. Just Google it. You're smart. Okay, we're going to listen to the actual show now. Bye. Jimmy, what is the significance of this? What's his name? Count Dankula?
Yeah, his real name is Marcus Meechan, I think.
Great. How old is he?
30, around 30.
Cool. So he's my age and goes by Count Dankula. Jesus.
Well, you go by rhyming with oranges on the YouTubes.
No, I will have you know, I rebranded when I was about halfway through my 20s, because I realised I can't be an adult taken seriously with a like mid-noughties MSN name. Anyway, so why should we care? What has happened with Count Dankula and his racist dog? And can a dog actually be racist? That's an interesting question that we might answer.
I'm just thinking about whether a dog can be racist now. Well, basically, as I said in the introduction, this guy, Meechan, managed to train his girlfriend's dog to respond to statements such as "gas the Jews" and also "sig heel" by raising its paw in a sort of Nazi fascist salute.
But we should clarify, this kind of behaviour would be seen as controversial. Certain people, yeah. Non-anti-Semites. Right. But because it's like anti-Semitic, "gas the Jews," something that happened in World War II. Mm. I'm patronising you as a listener now. I apologise. Go on, Jimmy.
I mean, this video would actually be illegal in Germany, I'm assuming, because of all their laws around the very tight restrictions around any kind of Nazi content. Mm-hmm. And seemingly, this video is also illegal in the UK because He's been fined £800, and he was also been convicted of sending a grossly offensive message under the Communications Act, aggravated by religious prejudice. This is according to The Week. It's been reported that this is a hate speech crime, but as I understand it, I've been reading some of the legal commentary around it, I don't think it's been prosecuted under the laws that are actually directly related to hate speech, but I might be mistaken about that. There's been a bit of ambiguity. Different people have been saying different things. You don't think he should have been convicted, right, Jazza?
So it's interesting that that is the way that it has been framed by the courts, that it's that he's been convicted of sending an offensive message. Mm. And I know that, like, part of this is semantics, but that's kind of what law is. I'm not sure that a YouTube video is necessarily a message. I feel like a message has an intended receiver.
I mean, the intended recipient in this case was his girlfriend.
His girlfriend, yeah. And I'm assuming she's not the one who brought the case.
No, I think it was originally seen by just a handful of Meechan's friends, and then somebody must have posted it on Facebook, and then it was spread around. It went viral.
He posted it on his own platform.
He posted it on YouTube, but originally it was only intended to be seen by a handful of his friends. It wasn't mm-hmm. intended. He didn't have a wide following, so it wasn't really broadcast as such. It was just published. And presumably if only, you know, 20, 30 people had seen it, nothing more would have really come of the video. It would have just sat on the internet for the rest of time.
Mm-hmm. But then when this communication actually did take the form of something that is closer to a message, there was nobody who was kind of like the, I don't know what the actual legal definition is, the accuser, the person, who was he being kind of like charged by?
So in British law, at least, I mean, this case was tried in Scotland, and I'm not that well familiar with the differences between Scottish and English law, but he was prosecuted by the state prosecutor, effectively. It's not like...
So it was the state against this was brought to... Okay.
Yeah. In American law, at least, judging by their TV shows, it's often the victim of a crime who is responsible for bringing charges, or like a victim's family or something, because they can choose to drop the charges. But my understanding in the British system is that it's all basically... All the decisions are made by, like, the Crown Prosecution Service in the case of England and Wales, and whichever the equivalent is in Scotland.
Yeah, so I know that you have, I think, a much more liberal view when it comes to freedom of speech, but we're both, like, broadly in agreement that expression shouldn't be, as much as possible, it shouldn't be policed.
The only difference, we both think that incitement to violence should be illegal.
Yes, and I also think that if this were sent to somebody in order to offend them, and that person were offended, then under this law, I feel like that's a genuine case. When it's like a personal message, I feel like it's very different to a broadcast. I have issues, I think, with people being offended by, like, for example, a tweet or a video online, because it isn't necessarily for them. And then you have a huge problem with kind of like context collapse. Mm. And I think that Count Dankula is probably a victim of context collapse in like a classic sense.
Well, the video actually starts with him saying this is intended as a joke, which is rare for, like, there's been a lot of stuff of, like, comedians having sort of clips of them in stand-up clubs doing a live routine, and then a joke being posted on the internet without kind of the setup, or without, like, with as you say, people being viewing it outside of the context in which it was originally sort of spoken, as it were.
I mean, there's Kathy Griffith, right? Who, a comedian in the United States, who has basically been unable to find work since she posed for, like, a magazine cover with a severed head of Donald Trump. It wasn't the real severed head, but head of Donald Trump.
That would be a real news story.
Yeah, big time. But I don't think she has been prosecuted. And that wasn't for want of trying. I think people did end up trying to prosecute
her. But America obviously has the First Amendment, so it's pretty hard to sort of prosecute someone for being offensive in the US.
Do you think that this is justified at all, Jimmy? I think I know what your answer is going to be, but what do you think?
I'd probably go further and say that even if he'd sent the video, which does have the preamble of this is intended as a joke to somebody deliberately, I don't think it should have been illegal as such. The only difference is if it was part of like a concerted pattern of harassment, that would be something slightly different. But this is the weeds you get into when discussing free speech, because obviously harassment is different from a one-off incident. It's sort of the difference between somebody, say, like calling you a cunt in the street and somebody like going to your house every day and putting a letter through your letterbox that says you are a cunt is quite different, if you see what I mean.
But I will say that there is a difference when it is kind of like racially, or when it's based around like race or gender or religion.
I would part ways with you on that. I don't think there is actually
I think that there is, like, being like when I've been called a fag and had like a bottle thrown at me and whatever, I think that that is a very different experience to just being called a cunt. Do you know what I mean? Because I've been called a cunt in the street and I've been called a fag in the street, and they both feel, as a recipient of those things, very different. And I can imagine being a woman and being on the receiving end of public, not necessarily public, and being on the receiving end of misogynistic abuse is a very different experience to just being on the receiving end of like of somebody being a twat to you, like outside a club or something, you know?
Yeah, I can see how those things are different. That the way that hate speech, so the way people argue usually for like there being effectively extra punishment for, say, shouting at someone in a way that's bigoted or something like it, you know, touches on a protected characteristic, is usually that it's not just an offence against the individual victim, it's an offence against the community that they are a part of, be that, say, the LGBT community or the an ethnic community or whatever. I sort of see the logic to that, but I guess I don't fundamentally buy it. It seems to me, in many ways, being somebody targeting you because of who you are as an individual is worse than actually somebody targeting you because you're part of a wider group. But I do accept that they're different in a way.
But do you not see how it is, like when you look at it from kind of like a law and order way of things, if somebody is going to be willing to target somebody based on their background, on their identity, then they are also probably going to be willing to do something similar to somebody else from that group. And so it is a different type of an offence. I would argue that it's worse because it is kind of drenched in prejudice than kind of somebody saying nasty things about you and saying like specifically towards you as an individual.
Mm. When we're sort of talking about this hypothetical scenario, it's sort of like comparing apples and oranges in a way, isn't it? Like the two situations in which this sort of thing would come up are quite different, not just in... They're different in a more rounded way than the way we're highlighting, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, but I think that there is... The reason that he has been... that Count Dankula has been brought to a court is because it was something that was, I don't want to belittle it by using the word offensive, but it's something that was offensive to Jewish people, and that's the reason, and those people are protected under the law because there is a history of those people being repressed and being abused. And I mean there's a history and it's still fucking happening now.
The funny thing is though if he'd just like clipped, say, a bit of Life of Brian, which is the Monty Python film, which kind of takes the piss out of the Jesus Christ story. If he'd just taken a clip from that, and when that film was released, it did attract a lot of protests. There are a lot of church groups, of Jewish groups, of Muslim groups even, who were offended by that and did protest that. But if he'd just broadcast that, which is indisputably offensive to like people who followed the Abrahamic religions, he wouldn't have been punished. But
yeah, but they never said gas the Jews.
It is a different degree, but it does shows like the arbitrariness of like what is counted as offensive and or not, because both of those things, the life of Brian and Count Dankula's like video, they're both offensive.
They're in the same ballpark, but I think there is specifically the gas the Jews line. I think that's kind of what tipped this over the edge. I don't think that it would necessarily have. If he got the dog to Nazi salute by saying Heil Hitler, or like even if it were just Sieg Heil, I'm not sure it would have had the same kind of resonance, and it would have been brought to a court. And I think
I think that's probably true. But the other thing is that I think if he'd worked this into a stand-up routine and performed it live and taken a video of essentially the same joke but in a slightly different context and put it up online, I don't think there's any way he would have been prosecuted.
I agree.
That's kind of fucked up, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is not the kind of medium that YouTube and like the online space needs to be seen more as like a performance platform than a private messaging service, which I think is kind of the semantic route that they ended up going down legally here. And I think that that's a shame.
It is a pretty weird case, and I haven't read any commentary from lawyers who think that the law has come out looking good from this. Even if you think that Meechan's an idiot and having watched the video,
he probably is a bit of an idiot.
But also
people should be allowed to be idiots.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole point of having free speech protections is that people are allowed to say things that make you go, oh, you know.
Yeah.
Exhibit A,
this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I do take your point about sort of deliberately targeted messages, but I don't think there should be like a broad-based ban on grossly offensive messages if you're going to include, as you say, like YouTube videos or like Facebook statuses or whatever else.
Yeah, of course there needs to be a nuanced approach to it. I'd never suggest anything else, Jimmy.
Yeah. Speaking of nuanced approaches,
maybe it is a nuanced approach. Korea.
Correct. I mean, the meat of this story, as it were, is a bit nuanced, because in some ways, you know, there's that video of Kim Jong-un walking to the border and him stepping across the border as the first like North Korean like leader to do that, and then shaking hands with President Moon. It's a good photo op, but what is the actual substance beneath it? Is there any substance beneath it?
This is what is kind of blowing my mind. I can't believe that this is happening. Like everything that because all of my adult life, like North Korea has been on the receiving end of like UN sanctions and sanctions from individual countries as well. They've been testing, they've been illegally testing nuclear weapons since 2006. And this isn't even something along the same lines of like Iran, where Iran is suspected of having testing nuclear weapons, but there's not actually an awful lot of evidence. There's a lot of evidence that they have nuclear kind of like power facilities, but there's not a huge amount of evidence for actual armaments. North Korea is actually like blowing shit up. And now there's kind of been in the last couple of months like this big like this genuinely came out of the blue for me. It was only last year that Trump was talking about raining fire and fury down on them.
Well, I understand is it Mike Pompeo?
Mike Pompeo, who's the new Secretary of State who replaced Rex Tillerson.
Yeah, he went over to Pyongyang, is that right? He stopped over
Pyongyang.
There. Yeah. So this has somewhat been building in the background, right?
But Mike Pompeo has only been in the job for like less than a month. It's not possible that this would have been able to have turned around in a month. And if it has, then Jesus Christ, Trump and his team are geniuses. But
dictators are, you know, somewhat flip-floppy when it comes to policy areas.
Maybe they are somewhat flip-floppy. And this is why I had my initial skepticism when certain people on my Twitter feed were suggesting that Donald Trump got a Nobel Peace Prize. Although, as we said earlier, people have been given peace prizes for much less work. Hmm. But I find it impossible for the current administration. So we lost the General Secretary. Oh God, what are they called? Like Defense Advisor or something. Like it's that kind of a title. And we've had a new Secretary of State for under a month as well. Hmm. So I don't believe that this sudden burst has come from them. It is possible that it's from people who are lower down and not necessarily the heads of the figureheads of the Trump administration when it comes to relations with North Korea, but I also I'm skeptical of that. We have heard, as I said in the introduction, from the foreign minister of South Korea, Kang Kyung-hwa, that Trump deserves some that Trump deserves some credit for this, which is also the thing that kind of blew my mind. Part of me wants to say that she knows who is listening and she wants to keep him on side, which would be very smart. But I'm also aware that it then sounds like me just having confirmation bias, that I can't possibly believe that it is Trump who has actually caused this.
I think, to be fair to you, if Trump has caused this, he's caused this in part by being so erratic that the other people around the table have thought
had to calm the fuck down.
Yeah, they thought, oh, maybe we can't be the bonkers ones anymore. Like, yeah, there is someone more insane, and he has a lot of nuclear weapons at his disposal.
Yeah. So actually, I think you might be onto something there. But it's kind of it's very interesting because I think that this is actually a product of the long kind of like over 12 years of sanctions being brought on North Korea since they started testing nuclear weapons. So they have had, I believe, 4 big nuclear tests that have been primarily on this nuclear testing facility that is now being closed down, which is one of those really significant things that are coming out of this. So their first test was in 2006, second in 2009, then 2013, then 2016. And ever since, especially the third and the fourth, there have been really, really strong sanctions, both from the UN and from the wider international community. So Obama initially rolled out really strict sanctions, followed by even stronger ones from Trump in September of 2017.
Do you know what form the sanctions take?
Yeah, so from the US, it basically was if a boat has come into contact with North Korea, then we won't let it pass through our ports. Like it was basically, if you go anywhere near North Korea when it comes to trade, then you can't trade with us. Mm. And then the 2016 sanctions from the United Nations after their fourth nuclear test. So they had gradually, after each test, they increased the types of sanctions that it were. So it was initially kind of like precious metals like gold and zinc and all of this kind of stuff. And then by 2016, basically no raw material was allowed to be sold outside of North Korea. So no oil, no gas, no stones, no soil, no like whatever was allowed to be sold outside of North Korea. And I have a feeling that this is probably the result of about 12 years of sanctions and kind of resilience from the international community. Even China has kind of taken a step back and has said that it's, and in recent years has not even said that it's going to buy coal from North Korea.
I think reading in The Economist that China has been you know, particularly unimpressed with like the latest wave of nuclear posturing from Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, and so actually maybe it's Xi Jinping who should probably be getting a Nobel Peace Prize.
If we're being nice, it's probably a combination of Chinese diplomacy and American diplomacy and South Korean diplomacy, right?
Yeah. Oh, look at that. A nuanced, I'm proud of you.
I mean, maybe American diplomacy is a bit too nice way of putting Trump's tweeting, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's special, let's say.
Sure, sure. But there's also the BBC contextualized this really, really well, and giving kind of like the example of Libya. So Libya had their own kind of nuclear weapons program, but had been on the receiving end of sanctions until about 2003. And in 2003, Gaddafi, who was obviously not dead then, decided to dismantle his nuclear program in return for lifting of sanctions. And it looks like we might end up seeing something similar here. Obviously, that didn't mean that Libya all of a sudden turned into like the West's best friend. Obviously, there was a very significant revolution and regime change, in case it's that in the last like, decade.
Understatement of the year.
Yeah, and Libya is still a bit of a shit show. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's green pastures for North Korea down here. So yeah, go on.
I mean, we should say that a lot of this Korea stuff, like the promises from North Korea, is pretty tentative, and North Korea's definitely in the past made overtures saying that they were gonna like behave like well and then gone back on them later. So it's premature.
These are leaps and bounds. Like, this is such a big deal. He's crossed over. He's going to... So the North and the South have different time zones because pettiness. And they're going to have... they're going to have one time zone now, which is incredibly symbolic. We just had the Winter Olympic Games in, I believe it was Pyeongchang in South Korea, and the North and South Korean teams competed as the same nation. Mm. And then in one of his speech, in the speech after the summit that Kim Jong-un had with President Moon, he talked about Korea being one nation, an entire nation. And we don't really like think about this very much in the West, I don't think, but the fact is that Korea has only been separated since World War II. Up until World War II, the peninsula was always united. It often traded hands from its bigger neighbors in the form of Japan, like China, but it was always one nation. And it breaks people's hearts that there's a line kind of drawn in the sand right down in the middle of it. Mm.
Do you not think in practice, though, it is going to be very, very difficult to reintegrate the two countries?
I don't think that this necessarily means reintegration.
No, but if ultimately that is what... I mean, that's certainly what America wants, and I think it's probably what South Korea wants, is a...
It's definitely what China wants as well.
Why does China want that?
Because it means that they don't have to be the best friend of the crazy person.
I thought China liked having North Korea there as a buffer zone between kind of American military bases in South Korea and the Chinese mainland.
I've heard that argument, actually. Maybe you are right, and I'm just talking out of my ass.
Maybe. Mm. I mean, this is a sort of a side angle and like slightly a parochial one, but North Korea does stand down, if it does denuclearize, and it does, I mean, forget the reintegration stuff, but if it stops being an exiled member of the international community, doesn't this kind of prove that the kind of approach of sanctions and diplomacy and not actually invading rogue nations that Jeremy Corbyn advocates can work?
Sure, but it's worked at the expense of the lives of we probably will never know how many North Korean people have died because of famine and because of poverty in the North that has been partially caused by these sanctions. It's like, if you have a rogue nation like this, do you want to blow them up or do you want to starve them? Those seem to be the two options.
So you're kind of portraying this almost as a siege, basically.
Yeah, I feel that's exactly what I would describe it as.
Hmm. I mean, you kind of said that you don't think, obviously, reintegration would take a very, very long time if it did take place. But what do you see as the kind of...
The end goal?
Well, not even the end goal. I mean, assuming that this process continues to progress, where do you think, what do you think the situation would look like in 10 years, say?
I think you end up with a permeable border, and I think that's probably as close as you will get within 10 years. Or maybe I'm wrong. These things can move very quickly. I mean, look at Germany.
The Berlin Wall, yeah.
Oh, man, I don't know. Something that does kind of make me not necessarily worry, but something that I've got my eye on. There was a really interesting article out of Fortune, who are kind of like, surprise, surprise, with a name like that, they cover stock markets. they found that the US's five largest defense contractors have lost about $10 billion in value on just one day last week after the Korean leaders like met each other. And if there's anything that America likes, it's its defense sector,
military industrial complex.
So if we end up with kind of like more peace in North Korea, then where's our next war?
I guess we could just start firing missiles at the moon, you know, if we want to keep paying money to those defense contractors.
It's the only way we're going to be able to solve all of humanity's woes, Jimmy. It's by having a shared enemy.
That's true, yeah. Bring on the Martian invasion.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Should we talk about fatbergs now? There was no way to pivot to that, like, smoothly, so...
Speaking of aliens, actually, you know, have you seen this? Is actually they did an hour long Channel 4 documentary about this. Have you seen any of it?
So I've seen the trailer, I've read some articles on it, but I haven't actually seen the full documentary.
So I've seen about half an hour of it.
Was it too disgusting for you to get through the last half hour?
No, I just had better things to do than see Rick Edwards look at other people wade through poo.
How much of it was poo? Or human waste?
Well, no, it was in a sewer. There's poo there.
Well, yeah, but like, was it like 50% poo or 70% poo?
I don't know.
The stats, Jazza.
This whole thing was full of stats. It was the opening line of the documentary was, "Across Britain, under the streets of our cities, something sinister is lurking." And I'm like, is it sinister if it's just a load of lipids? I'm not sure that that's possible.
By lipids, you mean mostly like cooking oil fat or something?
It was 90% cooking oil fat. Yeah. So, although also, I don't really know what else I can do with, like, if I'm deep frying something, what can I do with that fat?
I guess you could, like... soak out with tissue paper? I don't know.
And then put that paper down the toilet that is then going to...
Don't put it down the toilet. Throw it in the bin.
Then what do I do with it? In the bin? Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, maybe you're right. I really enjoyed that Rick Edwards, who we know from our time at Leaders Live in 2015. Do you remember him?
No, not really. Leaders Live.
Rick Edwards, friend of the podcast, occasionally tries to be a serious presenter. He described himself as a TV presenter and science enthusiast. Are you Rick Edwards? And they ended up getting a fucking mortician to do an autopsy of a lump of fat. Now, I don't know a huge amount about morticians, but I'm pretty sure that the skills needed to cut open and determine the cause of death of a body are very different to the chemical and the biological kind of like shaping of a load of fat and poo and condoms and wet wipes.
Yeah. Why are people flushing condoms down the toilet?
It's often, if you have like a bin and you open it up and somebody sees like a condom, like, it's embarrassing, isn't it? I understand.
They put it in some tissue and then just throw it in there, you know. It's not rocket science, is it? I'm just saying, you know, just straight out there.
One of the things that was really interesting about this was kind of like a representation of what I think is a little bit of an endemic when it comes to like the health and fitness industry and people putting stuff in their bodies to look sexy. So there was over half of the proportion of pharmaceutical kind of like molecules found in the sample that they were doing for this show of the Fatberg. They said Fatberg so many times, it was hilarious. They found a load of chemicals of two types of chemicals called hordenine and osterine, which are both kind of like illegal banned like muscle building supplements.
You mean that they're banned in like the competitive weightlifting or sporting competitions, like, or are they just generally banned?
So they're banned in competitions, but also you would need a prescription and a medical reason to get these. You can't buy these over the counter.
Right.
I believe they're in the same or a similar band to steroids, where it's not actually illegal to use them, but it's illegal to sell them.
Right. Okay. Anyway, you were saying that they found a high proportion of these in the Fatberg?
Yeah. So I think that this kind of shows a little bit of a, like, one of the issues that we have with especially male kind of like body issues and the increased use of stuff like steroids and other kind of like banned substances. A lot of evidence was found of like illegal pre-workouts, which are basically synthetic speed.
Why would somebody take something like that?
To get a pump and to be able to train harder.
Right.
Essentially.
So
it gives you more energy.
So it means you can lift heavier weights and push your body harder and faster.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that it was over half of the pharmaceuticals found in the sample that they had, I think, was quite it's shocking. It's really weird.
Is that not related to how like the human body digests those sort of chemicals? Like, because they said that they found more of those than, say, MDMA and cocaine, but is that something to do with like the process by which it's digested rather than, say, absolute consumption numbers?
I don't know.
Yeah. Advice and context. Perhaps.
That would have been a really interesting thing to ask the mortician who was who's looking at this lump of fat out of the sewers. It was also, I felt really, they were kind of following this 21-year-old kid because he was the guy that apparently the only way of being able to get rid of these fatbergs in the sewers is by sending a person down there and like cutting it out by hand, which I'm unconvinced by. Like, I'm like, can you not just go down there with some fairy liquid and emulsify that shit? Like, surely it's just the same thing. And they had this 21-year-old kid who they did say the name of, but they only said his actual name once and then proceeded to call him Manhole for the rest of the program. I felt really sorry for him. And then he got some poo in his eye and he had to sit there with saline solution washing poo out of his eye.
It's like those stories you hear at like music festivals of somebody like falling into the like through the toilet into like the river that is flowing away from the toilet bank. I'm a little bit skeptical. I'm like, why haven't they just invested in like a drone with a saw or like something that can, you know, fly into the sewers and
with a saw? It's like something out of Robot Wars.
Well, yeah, you know, of all the potential uses for a drone, surely fly into a sewer like chock full of human waste and cutting through it is one of the most legitimate.
Yeah, they don't have smell. Something that I found that was really interesting was actually that most of the kind of like stuff that makes up fatbergs, because there's many of these. Did I mention that across Britain, under the streets of our cities, something sinister is lurking? You can recycle them, so you can turn it into biodiesel fuel and put a load of like the plastics and stuff into the recycling process, so it's actually not all bad. It just means that poor Manhole is gonna have to go down and dig out a load.
I mean, it was suggested in this documentary that the sort of way where the amount of stuff we're consuming is unsustainable even outside of the fact that our sewage infrastructure is not up to scratch?
Well, it's so in London, the sewer system is hundreds of years old.
It's a Victorian sewer system, yeah.
Yeah, it's like over 150 years old and was built they looked far ahead in the Victorian era and were like, oh, we're going to build a sewer system for about 4 million people. That should be enough. Greater London's population is now over 10 million, and like the London metropolitan area, I think, is 7 or 8 million, something like that. There's too many people pooing, which is apparently the reason why we are getting these like massive build-ups. And at some point, we probably are going to need to increase the capacity of these really old and outdated kind of like pieces of infrastructure for cities like London. Mm. It reminds me of like when I was living in China, you see these beautiful kind of automated like metro systems and underground systems that are clearly built for the future and with like hundreds of years, so that they're relevant in hundreds and hundreds of years. And Victorians didn't really do that yet. They tried.
Harsh, man.
it's one of the greatest inventions ever created by man is the Victorian sewage system. It just didn't realize that there were going to be so many of us. But that's why we have Brexit, right? So that we have fewer people.
Well, you know, if it sounds like another potentially good reason to limit migration, if, you know, we literally can't process the amount of shit that people are expelling from their bodies.
I am surprised that Fatbergs didn't come up more in the Leave campaign. Maybe it should have.
A missed opportunity, I think.
Clearly, yeah.
I like that you've even managed to bring Fatbergs back to Brexit. That's very on brand.
I'm sorry, I apologise. We're meant to occasionally talk about things that aren't Brexit.
Hmm. Well, I think we have done that. Is there anything further you want to add about the disgusting amount of sewage pumping through underneath London streets?
Can people stop tweeting me and saying that I look like Rick Edwards? Thanks.
Do you look like Rick Edwards?
No, I'm just another white man with a beard, Jimmy.
I mean, we all look alike, mate. So
you don't
just deal
have
with
a
it.
Beard. You don't have a beard.
Okay, don't rub it in.
It's okay, you've got that bit around like the chin.
Yeah, that is true.
That's reasonably true. That's quite thick.
Thanks. I think is that called like a lady pleaser when you just have like the rubbish moustache?
Oh, that's
and
disgusting.
Chin
disgusting. That's just I'm shutting this conversation down right now. Oh no,
I might have just made that up. I hope I haven't.
Jimmy, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at JDE Nichols, where they can tell me what the name of that rubbish facial hair is known as.
I think it is called a lady pleaser. And you can find me at Jazza John. That's nice, because it's my name. It was very handy. Yeah. You can also please leave us a review on iTunes, because that always helps us. And some people left some really lovely, some really amazing feedback for us last week, didn't they, Jimmy?
They did, yeah. I'm not actually 100% sure if one of these reviews isn't from somebody who tweeted us.
It's okay, we'll just pretend that it isn't.
This is from DMB Dan 89, who I think might be the Dan who we read out his tweet last episode, but I'm not 100% sure.
That's okay. He gets double the.
Yes, so few people write reviews that if you write two of them, we'll probably read out both of them. Jazza and Jimmy make politics a lot more bearable and interesting in the use of their wit. A perfect partnership. The podcast is both informative and insightful and can be understood by even a mere layman like myself. Keep up the good work. Love you guys.
It's very wholesome, makes my heart so warm.
I read it slightly sarcastically, I'm afraid, but it wasn't intended that way. Shall I read the other one out?
Yeah, there's another one by Over and Out that I quite enjoyed.
Over and Out. This one's quite long. I'll pause and Jazza can interject with his
thoughts. No. There's one bit that I actually really like. Uh-huh. He used to think of us as good cop, bad cop. I'm guessing that I'm the good cop, obviously. But now he thinks of it as more of an overly passionate student activist versus the decent, cynical barrister. Sorry, guys. Well, thanks, Over and Out.
I found that quite flattering, because I'm obviously the
sensible
person.
Because you're
the barrister,
and you're
the idiot.
I'm the idiot, naive student activist. I'm not sure.
Well, people need idiot student activists to, you know, suggest mostly terrible ideas, but, you know, a good idea every so often.
Well, it's from now. I'm just here to announce that from now on, I'm non-platforming Jimmy, and I am just going to be doing the.
That's such a student thing to do, man. What are you doing? I mean, you are actually a student, aren't you? So.
I am for 2 more months, yeah. And then I have to do real work.
You're in the land of the living.
No, don't like it.
Yeah. I'm not actually a barrister, though. I should clarify.
We should clarify. Jimmy hates qualifications. Right, shall we go now?
Yeah, let's go. Let's go.
Okay. Bye, bye, bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Jazza, I know you're fond of me, but, you know, contriving news stories at the 11th hour just to get speak to me a little bit longer really is an honor. Man, I mean, if you want to go for a pint, we can go for a pint.
I just miss you.
I know you have your connections in cabinet office, and this sort of thing really isn't necessary.
Not since we broke up, Jimmy. My connections to Parliament have now all been severed. So we literally just finished recording that episode, and we got the notifications on our phones that Amber Rudd has just resigned as Home Secretary. Jimmy, why is this a big deal?
It's a big deal because Theresa May's government has generally been sort of seen as useless and unaccountable, and this is actually one of the few times. I think that this is the first time, other than the Michael Fallon resignation over sort of sexual harassment allegations, that somebody major has resigned for doing something wrong. Is that a fair summary?
But so this is actually really interesting. Fallon was a wait, no, who was her deputy prime minister?
Deputy
Prime Minister in all but name is what they called him.
Oh, right. I can't remember.
I can't remember his name. This is what happens when we... Oh, it was Damien Green. Damien Green had to resign in 2017. And he was a really close political ally of Theresa May. And Amber Rudd is also an incredibly close political ally of Theresa May. She's often kind of touted as a possible replacement for her one day, and appears to have a lot of the same kind of kind of ideology and same kind of working style as well, because that's working out really well for Theresa May. Can we agree, though, that this isn't a problem of her making? This isn't something that Amber Rudd should be resigning for. This is a Theresa May problem. We talked about this last week, didn't we, when we talked about the Windrush scandal?
So it seems to have come off the back of this letter that's been published in The Guardian from Amber Rudd to Downing Street, in which she set, quote, ambitious but deliverable targets for an increase in deportations of immigrants. And this was after Amber Rudd appeared before a select committee and said she was unaware that there were any targets being set in relation to sort of deportations. I can't remember what the specifics of those targets were, but she claimed to not know anything about them, and obviously she was lying, I guess. So I wouldn't entirely let Amber Rudd off for this, but you're correct that just reading this, it was targets for removals. But anyway, you're correct that ultimately the policy derives from Theresa May's hostile environment that she put in place during her tenure as Home Secretary under David Cameron.
Yeah, and I mean, that was because of a wider conservative policy to promise to bring down immigration as a whole, right?
Yeah, net migration. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a way, this policy is owned by not just Theresa May specifically, not just Theresa May's administration, not even also David Cameron's administration, but it's really a Tory party policy. It's not really related to any individual Tory politician, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Oh God, I love it when this happens, because then you get to play politician top trumps. It's great. Who do you think replaces her? Who the fuck wants this job now?
I mean, what notable Tories could potentially... I mean, so Philip Hammond and Boris Johnson both have, like, higher prestige jobs than Home Secretary, so they can be, like, safely ruled out. But is there, of the people in the cabinet, is there anyone who sort of seems like an obvious choice? A lot of people seem to be tweeting about Michael Gove, although I think it's intended ironically, but...
No, that could happen.
Yeah, I just thought that could happen.
Oh, no.
Also, Sajid Javid, who I think is...
Interesting. It wasn't... He was...
What's he doing these days?
He was doing business. Sajid... This is how we do research on the fly, dear listener. We Google. Sajid Javid.
He was... Communities and local government, it says here.
Oh, yeah, he got a demotion. I don't think he's... No. No.
No?
I don't think so. I'd be... Because also there's... say what you want about Theresa May. She is not like Margaret Thatcher in that she tends to help women. you might laugh.
Yeah, you're saying...
Margaret Thatcher left a cabinet with not a single woman in it apart from her. Mm. And there's kind of like the top four... positions in British politics, and they are Prime Minister, Chancellor, Foreign Office, Home Office. With Amber Rudd gone, and if a man comes in, then we are back to three men and Theresa May. And I think that is something significant in terms of like optics, right?
Yeah, I think so. That said, are there any like women in particular that you think would be good picks?
Well, she's burned bridges with quite a few women who may have actually been quite good at this job. I'm thinking Justin Greening, who was recently fired as Education Secretary.
Yeah.
I think she would have been highly, like she would have actually been quite appropriate for this kind of a job. Oh no, but it is going to be Govey. It's going to be Govey. No.
I mean, does Theresa May actually have any? She's
never allies seen, left.
Allies left. Yeah, she's never been seen as like a quote clubbable politician. To use that phrase, but yeah, I don't know. this is kind of idle speculation, really. But it would make me laugh if Michael Gove managed to like wheedle his way back to like. One of the
or maybe Jeremy Hunt, who's been destroying the health service for the past like 8 years. Maybe he deserves something new.
I think Hunt has said, and I think this is sincere, that he doesn't really want any larger job than being health secretary. He just wants to continue doing that, and then step down and step away from politics. And I think from him that actually seems credible.
I think in a different world, maybe Priti Patel would have also been tipped. But we should also remember she had to quit her job because she didn't think that she'd had to ask permission to meet with foreign officials.
Mm.
God, yeah. Man. This is exciting, isn't it? Korea's going to be reunited. There's fatty poo underneath our feet taking over our cities. And we're going to have a new Home Secretary. Oh, it's so exciting.
You mentioned that Amber Rudd was seen by some as a successor to Theresa May. What do you think this does for her career prospects?
Well, she also has the problem that last year at the election, she ended up coming back with a tiny majority. Let me just look that up, actually, because she nearly didn't get back into Parliament. She has a majority of 346, which is tiny. And I think that, if there's another election, it ends up, like, she could potentially be ousted really, really easily. Like, she has a majority of only 0.5%. And so she... I think that's kind of like doused some of the possible flames of her being a successor to somebody like Theresa May, because you do need a leader with a relatively safe seat, and she isn't somebody with a safe seat at the moment. I don't know what she goes. Maybe she just goes back to being like a backbench politician, but I doubt it. I think that she's still also going to be a big advocate for Theresa May. Maybe we see her on TV making the case more, although she's never been particularly good at media presentation, to be completely honest, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know she used to be married to A.A. Gill.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's actually one of the main things I associate with her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, A.A. Gill, for people who don't know, was a writer latterly for The Times. He was a restaurant critic for them.
He was famously rude.
Yeah, he was pretty rude. He was also really good mates with Jeremy Clarkson.
Great. I'm sure they were fantastic at dinner parties.
And he was a former alcoholic as well. So, you know, many...
the best people.
Yeah, I'm not giving
No, I'm being nasty now. Don't make me say nasty things.
Yeah, he is dead now, so you probably should be nicer in convention with that.
Sorry, it's not like you to slap my wrist. Christ. Right. Any more chat would be pointless speculation, because that's not what this 10 minutes has been anyway.
Yeah.
Shall we go properly now?
Yeah, we probably should go.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.